I want to begin, Bill, expressing my disappointment that they requested a teleprompter. I don't know what happened to it, but since it's not here, I guess I'll just have to wing it. But I do have a text, and I will give another version of it to Bill and have it posted on the website. I had the pleasure some years ago, I believe in 2006, to participate in a similar panel as this one, and it's nice to be back doing it again. Stephen Tonser told me once that he thought the future had a logic of its own. I think he meant by that we shouldn't be too confident about what we think we know about the times to come. And in that spirit, I just want to go back for 3 minutes and tell you what I said then and see if it has anything relevant to what we might say now. I said, as a preliminary remark, whatever one may think of the Iraq War, our military has fought a magnificent operation. For a military to be great, it must be used once in a while, as awful as that is. The young officers now serving in Iraq are now gaining the experience necessary to provide us a superb officer corps for decades to come. I think that was right. I think it's a better military than it was then. And talk about being thankful, Midge. We have a lot to be thankful for. And I hope our new president will not abuse this great gift as he sends them off to Afghanistan. The second thing I said is our economy is booming, not on the brink of collapse. You remember the Democrats were saying it was the worst economy in 50 years in that election year. We cannot do what we need to do in the world today with this economy. If we cannot do what we need to do in the world today with this economy, we will never be able to. For as a nation, we are rich, entrepreneurial, creative, and optimistic. And I think I got that partly right. We look back now and we can see that the strong foundations of this economy were built on sand, and at least some extent, maybe completely, that sand had been created by mismanaged government policies. But we don't know altogether what happened, and it's going to be a great difficulty for maybe decades to come to convince the world again that the somewhat market-oriented capitalism that we had in 2006 can be returned to. The third thing I said, and this was really the center of my piece, was talk about globalization and immigration. And ladies and gentlemen, I do not believe there was one word over the last 2 days from the podium about that topic. And I think it is an immensely important topic for the years to come if we're thinking about American conservatism. I'll just read you two sentences from those remarks. Only those nations prepared to embrace the possibilities of globalization will thrive, and through their successes have the better hope of protecting and enhancing the positive aspects of their nation's characteristics and traditions. Since America is a nation of immigrants, multicultural in fact and tradition, populous, creative, growing, and since we are already a relative free society, we should be more able to meet the challenges of globalization than any other society on earth. I think that's still true. But I used to talk to my students and say, try to get them to distinguish between problems and situations. Globalization and massive Hispanic immigration across our southern borders is a situation. Whether it's a problem or certain aspects of it are a problem is another matter. And conservatives know, and I don't think many other people, haven't done a very good job yet thinking about that. And I hope we'll do some serious thinking in the future. So, now I'll go on to my somewhat formal remarks. Back in January, when Bill and Steve Hayward asked me to participate in this panel, I spent time walking in the woods with my dog down along the Potomac River and kind of composed this speech in my head and eventually got to writing it down. And I early on decided I wanted to talk about responsibility. And as time passed, you know, the president had already talked about the new era of responsibility, and then he calls his budget the most irresponsible budget in history, the new era of responsibility. So time passed, everybody under the sun was talking about responsibility and irresponsibility as well they should. Some very interesting people I've heard, Sean and Russia on the radio. I think Mark Levin's new book, from hearing him talk about it, a book I've ordered, A Liberty and Tyranny, is very much about that. And then Jim Curtis, just the other day, I was practically getting on board the plane to come here, brought to my attention Paul Ray's new book called Self-Despotism. Paul Ray, a great historian now at Hillsdale College, Soft Despotism, Democracy's Drift, Montesquieu, Rousseau, Tocqueville, and the Modern Prospect from Yale University Press this very year. So I'm going to get that as soon as I get home. One of the things I thought about saying in my remarks about responsibility is to quote Tocqueville again from the book 2 of Democracy in America. And I said, no, everybody's heard these famous passages, and I can't do that. But then the Weekly Standard did it as their lead editorial. I said, if the Weekly Standard can do it, I can do it too. Is this coming across all right? I'm not very used to these silly things, and you could hear me without it, I assure you. All right, thank you. How's this? Is that better or worse?
Better.
All right. Appropriately, on the front of the National Weekly Standard, a herd of sheep. And I think that's what Tocqueville's talking about. Are we becoming a nation of sheep? And here, reading just a portion of this long and famous passage from Volume 2, Part 4, Chapter 6. I am trying to imagine under what novel features despotism may appear in the world. In the first place, I see an innumerable multitude of men alike and equal, constantly circling around in pursuit of the petty and banal pleasures with which they glut their souls. Over this kind of men stands an immense protective power which is alone responsible for securing their enjoyment and watching over their fate. That power is absolute, thoughtful of detail, orderly, provident, and mild. It would resemble parental authority if father-like it tried to prepare its charges for a man's life. But on the contrary, it only tries to keep them in perpetual childhood. It likes to see the citizens enjoy themselves, provided they think of nothing but enjoyment. It gladly works for their happiness, but wants to be sole agent and the judge of it. It provides for their security, foresees and applies their necessities, facilitates their pleasures, manages their principal concerns, directs their industry, makes rules for their testament, and divides their inheritance. Why should it not entirely leave them from the trouble of thinking and all the cares of living? And while I was working on this, I started reading finally a book I've been meaning to read for a long time, James C. Scott's Seeing Like a State, How Certain Schemes to Improve the Human Condition Have Failed. And here this Yale professor goes out of his way to say, I'm not a conservative, I'm not a Hayekian. Comes to pretty much the same conclusions as Tocqueville. Scott, writing about what he calls authoritarian high modernism, says, we have come here in the modern world to an altogether new understanding that one of the central purposes of the state was the improvement of all members of society, their health, skill, and education, longevity, productivity, morals, and family life. And that he goes on to explain in great detail over several hundreds of pages why that's not only a bad thing, but can't really be done. What I want to suggest to you, and I want to be careful not to go more than my 10 minutes, so I will quickly skip through some things, and like I said, I was going to wing it, and come to my conclusion. It's very well and good to do the great studies of public policy. I was going to talk about healthcare. There was a very fine editorial in the Wall Street Journal on Thursday, National Health Preview. Many of you are engaged in that important activity. And we know from the studies, and these are difficult, important studies to do, why national health care is going to produce bad health care and inferior quality health care and all sorts of bureaucratic messes. But at the end of the movement to national health care, America's still going to be a country with fairly good health. You know, England is not a horrible place to live. Canada is not a horrible place to live. This is a much better place to live. But in policy after policy, the one thing or after another, we still will not do well under the nation of sheep as we can do. But the real importance is that we will turn ourselves into sheep. It's not that it's inefficient. It's not that it's expensive. It's not that it's subprime. It's that we've given up a portion of our humanity to become the kinds of creatures that Tocqueville talks about here in this essay. And so I conclude, first of all, with a couple sentences of my own and then from a quotation of Paul Ray. Excuse me. Are we then going to stand on our own two feet to be free men? Or are we going to sink back into the statism of the past, into the mire of history? Excuse me. We must reject the kind blandishments of the high modern authoritarians because we reject their false promises of care, concern, and well-being. We know that they do not mean well for us, for their real purpose is not to provide necessary assistance, but to keep us from being free men. And here's Ray's final paragraph. The great storms have come and gone. The horrors of the 20th century recede now into the past. But tyrannical ambition and servile temptation will always be with us, as they most emphatically are now. The choice is nonetheless ours. We can be what once we were, or we can settle for a gradual, gentle descent into servitude. It's high time that we reclaim what is, after all, our legacy as Americans. For the genuine self-government they once enjoyed in plentitude is a possession wholly consonant with our dignity as human beings and with our rights as women and men. Let our motto be as it once was, don't tread on me. And let our virtue be individual responsibility. Amen to that. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the true argument that we should put forth on a daily basis. That is the reason why we must not just retire from the scene, but must stand for liberty again and again. I fear, however, that this may not be a winning stance, though it's the only stance that we should take. The high modern authoritarians are right. Living free is a serious and difficult business. Humanity, in general, may not be up to it. Will Americans be any different? We shall see. Thank you very much.